Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
All right, take care.
Can I get a little, like, this is Chuck Lavelle, piano extraordinaire, tree farmer extraordinaire, and you're listening to The Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk. Yes, sir.
Hi, this is Chuck Lavelle, a keyboard player with the Rolling Stones and also a tree farmer, and you are listening to the Mike Novak.
Mike Novak.
Novak, thank you. Okay, sorry. Hi, this is Chuck Lavelle, keyboard player with the Rolling Stones and a tree farmer and a lover of trees. And you, my friends, are listening to the Mike Novak Show on Progressive Talk Radio.
And Chicago's Progressive Talk.
I'll just say, and you can. On Chicago's Progressive Talk.
We're the only one, baby. Thank you very much.
You can edit it.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. And by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. He's the best thing to happen to the environment since the solar-powered hamster wheel. Great. Now he's putting hamsters out of business. Here he is, Mike Novak.
We have more people in the studio at 9 a.m. on a Sunday morning than our most Cubs games lately.
I agree. I didn't think we'd have this full of a house today, but we sure do.
And we'll get to the folks that are here. And that's okay. Don't.
Not yet.
Yeah, William makes a noise and her hand goes right over his mouth.
I said not yet.
Nice going, Mom.
Sorry.
It's okay.
What were you
going to
ask, honey? Now you can talk. It's okay.
We have a William sighting in the studio.
My son's with me this morning.
And you,
What? You're on the radio, honey. What? I got you.
Oh, is that sweet? He wants you to hug him.
He wants Mama.
So,
and he's got me this morning.
So take your hand away from his mouth.
I did already.
You know, I was going to do something on Talk Like a Pirate Day, but Mike Sanders ruined it for me.
He did.
I mean, he did the whole show on Talk.
He did the whole thing. He got all the new stuff, everything.
I'm not doing anything, except maybe, do you think we could get William to give us an arg? That would be the whole.
Can you give us a pirate arg, like a pirate says into the microphone? Say arg, like a pirate.
Arg.
Very good.
All right.
Who's your favorite pirate?
Is Blackbeard.
Blackbeard? Blackbeard's
Blackbeard,
pirate.
Blackbeard, that's a good pirate.
That's a good one. But yeah, I was thinking about Talk Like a Pirate Day, but you're right. Mr. Sanders had a full docket.
That's it. Mm-hmm. What you heard just now, that is our total tribute to Talk Like a Pirate Day. And Sanders is laughing outside in the hall.
He can keep Talk Like a Pirate Day. If he tries to snag Talk Like Shakespeare Day away from me, it's going to throw down in here.
Oh, you know what? I want Sanders to come in here and talk like Shakespeare, okay? I will take on that challenge.
Talk Like Shakespeare Day is my favorite one.
All right, well, I wanted to make sure that everybody knew that if you got distracted today, Heather Fry, we know why.
Yeah, there's a good reason.
There's a William sighting in here, and there's a William in the house.
There is a William in the house.
And you were watching, what was he watching out front there?
Big Green Rabbit.
Big Green Rabbit.
Our favorite green living sustainable educational program out of PBS in Denver, which you can get online.
William, do you like Big Green Rabbit?
No.
No.
like Dinosaur Dash.
Dinosaur Dan?
Yeah, Dinosaur Dan.
You don't have to scream, honey. It's a microphone. We'll learn this eventually. When Mommy's Home Studio is working again, I'll show you.
Well, see, he's got to start early. If he's going to learn the radio technique, he's got to start early.
My grandpa was a producer at LS for years, and there was on PBS over the week, there was a special on the show he did. A documentary. So we were
on Barn Dance.
On the Barn Dance, yeah. And he made it. He was actually in the documentary. They showed him an old photograph where he was standing in there. The last 2 minutes of the whole thing, whole family freaked out like it was Super Bowl Sunday just because a picture of my grandfather made it into the documentary. So we're trying to explain to him that radio's kind of gone generationally in the family. So how else can I brainwash him unless I bring him to work with me?
Did you explain that radio is also a curse? Yeah, okay.
Not quite yet, but we're working on it.
Oh, you're too funny, William.
Okay. All right.
And now the microphone goes away. Welcome. Good morning. We've got a jam-packed show, as always. And I mentioned that there are a ton of people in the studio, and it's not just William and Heather. It's also the Tour de Trees people. And as you heard at the top of the show, Chuck Lavelle from last year. You guys remember last year? I don't know how many people were listening to me last year.
We were.
You were. We had four listeners or five. And we're up to 20.
We're counting William?
No.
He's a 0.5.
He's a 0.5. All right, good. last July, we had the big broadcast from Millennium Park with the kickoff of the 2010 Tour de Trees. Steel Tour. Okay, and Mary DiCarlo, it's always there. It's not just the Tour de Trees. It's the Steel Tour de Trees.
Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome.
Keeping my sponsors happy.
That's right. It's all about keeping the sponsors happy. And Steel is a great sponsor. They are a great sponsor. And so is you've got Bartlett Tree Experts and Asplen and Dominion VA Power and Cask Helmets and Davey, which was and a number of them were big sponsors last year.
Yeah, we had a lot of involvement from Bartlett and Davey right in Millennium Park last year.
Pull that just a little closer. Okay. That's, by the way, Mary DiCarlo.
Oh, Mike, I've been waiting for that.
Am I the only guy that talks to you like that?
You're the only guy that talks to me at all, Mike.
Including your husband, right?
Yeah, well, he's like, what, you're working again this morning? I said, well, this is important.
Yeah.
I have to remind Mike to say, Steel Tour de Trees.
That's right, because he'll screw it up, and he'll forget. So, the 2011 Steel Tour de Trees. But it's not in Chicago. Last year, we started in Millennium Park, had the big broadcast there to get it rolling. And then the cyclists, all 60-plus, got on their bikes and rode out across Illinois. We met up at I met them in Kewaunee, where the big Osage orange tree is. And I haven't – I had Guy Sternberg on the show just several weeks ago, and I forgot to ask him how the Osage orange is doing. And you got a report on that? John Kirchner is also in the studio. He's a forester from the city of Chicago. You got a report on that, John?
Well, I met a guy out in Sydney for the ISA conference this past.
Sydney,
Australia.
How you guys get to go to Australia and I don't?
I paid for it.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
I didn't get to go to Australia.
So, Mary. Well, nobody would have talked to you there either, Mary. So.
And I talked to him about it, and he said the last time he had been there, it was doing pretty good. So it's still standing, as I understand.
It was so interesting being out there because you climbed the tree. Use the new power. What did they call that thing?
Power winch.
Power winch, which was awesome. You fire that baby up, and instead of doing the grappling hooks and stuff, you just kind of go up the side of the tree. And then Guy Milieu, who's a wonderful arborist, spent a lot of time up pruning the tree. On site, right? It was interesting. It was kind of the whole the cyclists all got there, And that was kind of photo op and let's have lunch. And then they leave, and poor guy is up there actually pruning the thing all day long by himself. I came by later because I took a bunch of pictures, and then I believe I left my camera or the camera case or something. So I was staying out Kewaunee way, and so I came back into town, and it must have been 6, 7 in the evening. There he is, still up in the tree, and he's going, can you hand me that branch down there, or take this branch down? And it's, guy, don't you have any assistance here? It's, but it just shows you that arborists work hard, and they work long hours. I have to tell the story because I'm actually, well, I'll tell it later when I do the Care of Trees commercial, but some crazy people in my neighborhood recently decided they were going to prune their tree. I think it's a cottonwood, and I'm sitting on the back porch, and I've told the story on the air, but suddenly all the power lines go shaking. And they had cut off this huge branch that just whacked the power lines up and down the block, and we're lucky they didn't just take out everything. It rattled them, and then we went, and I looked down there, and these idiots, and it's night, it was dark, and they had no lights. I know, and John is shaking his head right now. You know how dangerous that is, John. That's just insane, isn't it?
Well, if a branch crosses two of those power lines, it's curtains for anybody nearby, because messing with ComEd power lines is the worst thing on earth. Anybody could have easily been killed, especially at night, because they don't know where all these branches are going.
No.
And it's extremely dangerous. Every month throughout the United States, there are reports of not only arborists but also private citizens who don't know what they're doing or aren't careful enough, who injure themselves, and in many cases they kill themselves because they don't know what they're doing. So it's best to leave it to the professionals unless you're dealing with a very small tree where you can use a hand pruner.
Well, they were 30 feet up in the air, and now you look at that tree— I know, and everybody in the room is going, oh, my God, are you kidding me? Yeah, and you should be cringing. That's nutty. Don't think you can do it yourself. And now, and the tree, they butchered it. It's just the ugliest thing. And it makes me wonder, what were you trying to do with that? I have no idea what they were trying to do, because there's a half a tree there and these stumps left up, and you know how bad that is. If you cut it, don't just cut a branch halfway through it. I mean, out in the space, because it just leads to diseases and insect problems. Just not crazy. So,
did Guy get out of the tree ever?
They apparently did. I think after that, they kind of gave up for a while, because I think it scared the heck out of them, which it should have. Mm-hmm. It scared the heck out of me. Also here in the studio, that as I said, that was John Kirchner. Are you still an arborist with the City of Chicago?
Yeah, I'm still a senior city forester with the city.
Okay. Certified arborist and forester with the City of Chicago.
Yes.
Okay. Just making sure I got all that right, also is Greg Kadju and Pam Pinkley. They're both in the studio, and they were part of the Tour de Trees last year. And you guys are riding this year, too?
Yes, we are. We're definitely heading out to the road.
Don't hold those headphones right next to the mic. I'll get a little feedback on that. No, you don't actually need to listen to them to hear yourself, unless we get a phone call. And you're welcome to call us at 773-838-9278. We got arborists in the house, and if you got a tree question, or if your crazy neighbors are trying to, prune their trees 30 feet in the air in the dark, give us a holler, and we'll go over and yell at them. Pam, it's in Virginia this year.
Yes, it's in Virginia, 950 miles away, I believe we're going to be driving soon.
At least you don't have to ride your bike that far.
Yeah, how many miles on the bike?
Just about 500. Mm-hmm.
And last year was about 600, wasn't it?
Or
was
no,
it
a... it's usually 500
okay.
every year. The first one, this is actually our 20th tour this year, Mike. This is the 20th ride for the Tour de Trees. We started in 1992 with 13 people that were crazy about trees and crazy in general.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided that it would be really fun to ride their bikes 1,000 miles. from Seattle to Oakland, California.
Accounting for what people will do.
Well,
and find fun.
They thought it was fun. They raised $93,000. They rode 1,000 miles.
That was
miles.
The first year?
That was the first year.
My goodness.
1992, wow. And there were 13 of them.
Hmm.
And we have evolved somewhat since then. We have, on average, about 65 to 75 riders each year. We have brought it down to the level where you only have to be slightly crazy to do it. It's 500 miles in a week. And this year it's in Virginia. It moves around every year. It usually follows the International Society of Arboriculture's conference, which moves around each year. So we get to meet people in different parts of the country and talk about why it's important that research into keeping urban trees alive continues. Because a lot of people don't really think about the trees in their communities, and they don't really think about what goes into getting a little bitty sapling that somebody sticks in the ground to grow to a big, beautiful, majestic tree. And those are really the ones that give value to people's properties and bring keep the air clean and just keep our communities growing and thriving and beautiful.
As you say, that's what the Tree Fund is all about, and that's where the money goes to. We were talking before the show, you and John and I, about urban trees. And, John, you've dealt with that a lot. And we got to talking about tree pits. And a tree pit, of course, is where you put – you're on the sidewalk, and you got that hole that's in the sidewalk, the square hole, and the tree is planted in it. And I suspect a lot of – the world is divided – into two groups, the one group thinking, how does that tree survive at all? And then the other group, which I think might actually be larger, which is people who just assume a tree can survive anything because it's big, you know, and they don't pay any attention to how to care for a tree in the pit. But you were telling me that it's all about what's under the pit.
That's true, Mike. Trees grow naturally. They grow in dirt. In the forest, the layer of the forest every year is replenished by the leaves from the tree, and that decomposes, and you have all sorts of minerals and nutrition that the leaves provide to the soil. And this is on a constant yearly basis. So the roots are high. They're very fine. The tree does a wonderful job in bringing in all the nutrients and water and everything it needs through that system, which is why forest trees get to be so big, because the soil is so rich.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and the natural process of leaves dropping down and anybody, you know, as we get into fall, just a reminder, don't throw your leaves away. Don't get them carted off to a landfill. Put them around your plants. Put them around your trees. This is some of the best nutrients available to trees.
It is, because the nutrients that the tree brings up goes into the leaves,
mm-hmm.
from the soil, from the leaves and the litter in the forest floor from the previous years. And then when the leaves fall, it just brings it right back down. So you have a complete cycle, so that none of the nutrients from the trees ever go anywhere. So they feed themselves, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a constant circle of life.
Now,
in the forest.
In the forest, exactly.
Right. But in an urban area, suburban area, it's a lot tougher. I mean, you got trees planted on parkways, for one thing. The harshest thing would probably be the tree pit. That's a death sentence for a tree, generally, isn't it?
Well, it can be if you don't prepare the soil. And, I mean, I've had occasions where we talked about I planted some trees, some linden trees in asphalt. And the trees grew marvelously. And
when you say you planted them in asphalt, what do you mean?
The parkway was asphalted over. So we cut 5x5 squares. We planted 2.5-inch caliper B&B trees. And
bald and burlapped, for those of you who don't know what B&B. Don't you
bed
go
and breakfast?
Don't you start doing yeah, right. The bed and breakfast trees. We got them at a bed and breakfast down the block.
Well, anyhow, lindens don't do really good, but these flourished like crazy. And we found out that there was plenty of soil from the previous parkway that had been there. and there was no stone underneath the asphalt as a base layer. Most stone that goes down for sidewalks, for structures to be maintained in a parkway, have a base of about 6 inches of limestone. Well, we all know that limestone is very alkaline, and very few plants grow in highly alkaline soils. Mm-hmm. Because the pH of soils for trees runs from 6 to 7, with optimum being about 6.5 to 7. And we have pH soils in parkways, in just a regular parkway, that sometimes run up to 9 and 10.
Yikes!
Which is highly alkaline.
And it's because of the stone.
Well, it's because of the stone, and it's also because there's nothing else there. There's no nutrients that get into parkways.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you've got a lawn where you fertilize.
Yeah.
But then now you've got competition with the root systems and water for the tree roots.
Mm-hmm.
So now we've got more competition that was never there, even in a lawn. Now, in the tree pits.
Yeah. Now, let me just stop there very quickly, because a lawn is not a tree's friend. And a lot of people, they want to plant their lawn right up to the base of that tree, and they think everything's going to be happy. And the lawn and the tree are competing, and the lawn wins a lot of times because it has many more fibrous roots than the tree. The Morton Arboretum did a study that I talk about on the show where about 90% of the nutrients get sucked up by the lawn. And so really, and neither wins, because then if you've got shade, it makes it hard for your lawn to grow. So they're battling each other, and it's a lose-lose situation with trees and lawns.
Well, the other thing too with lawns is people don't like weeds.
Okay. I know where you're going with
and
this.
And they'll hire the tree companies, or they'll do it themselves. But most weed killers are what known as broadleaf weed killers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they get into the soil also. And I have seen a number of trees over the years where people have had a lawn service, which does the parkway and it does their private lawn, and the lawn looks fabulous. Well, you do that for about 5 or 10 years. Well, most trees in our area are broadleaf trees.
Yep.
And they eventually succumb to the weed killer.
Because they're sucking up those chemicals.
Exactly.
Too.
And they end up dying. And people are wondering, well, why did my tree die? And one of the questions we might ask is, well, do you have a lawn service? And people don't understand the correlation between the two, because they're just looking at the ground, at their beautiful grass. And I don't blame them for having such a wonderful landscape.
I do.
Well, that's fine.
But that's me. You know?
Like my lawn.
Yeah. Oh,
but
yeah?
There are a lot. Yeah, my lawn this year is a disaster.
Which is, you know, and a disaster usually means that you're not paying too much attention to it, which means that you're probably not putting down chemicals, and it's probably healthier in the long run, certainly healthier for humans and pets, mm-hmm. And for the environment than the one that's a perfect carpet, because those are the people who have been nuking it all summer. But that, by the way, that's John Kirchner, Forester, City of Chicago. Mary DiCarlo from the Tree Fund is also in the studio. Just I want to get back to the Tour de Trees. And, you know, we could go on about tree pits forever in the city. But you were – let's finish that thought, because I got you sidetracked on lawns. How is it that a tree survives in a pit like that?
Well, they're stressed from the moment you plant them. The sidewalks heat up, so you have a lot of heat. There's no moisture that gets in there other than through the tree pit itself. Occasionally, some trees, honey locusts, do fairly well, but still, they are still very, very stressed. And you've got compaction, even in the tree pit itself, because some tree pits we don't put tree grates on, which are supposed to protect the sidewalk surface,
mm-hmm.
so people could walk across it. But then when you fill the tree pit up to the with mulch and everything, people will still walk across it. So you still have that root ball, which contains all of its known root system. When you mm-hmm. plant it, that root ball will get compacted also. So compaction reduces the amount of oxygen and the air in the soil, so you have no spaces for water to filter through.
And is that are the roots? You and I know that the roots of a tree are basically in the top 2 feet of soil. So let's say you got a tree pit and there's no soil going out. Is a tree ever going to try to send roots down and out around? Is it going to, you know, try to figure that out?
Well, it's already figured it out. If it can't go out, they go around.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, in many cases, it's like planting them in a pot.
So that where the roots come out the bottom.
There's no drainage at the bottom, so they just keep going round and round and round.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
So it's then they end up, the tree ends up being girdled, or you could actually pick the tree up when it gets a little bit bigger, and you would pull out the entire root ball because it hasn't gone anywhere underneath the sidewalk to get to grow any roots.
So it's really hard to keep a tree like that alive.
Yes. We are working on it, though.
Uh-huh.
We are coming up. We're trying different things in different areas.
Biochar? You were talking about biochar?
Biochar.
Go ahead, Mary DiCarlo.
Maybe I can take this one. We have some really interesting research right now going on that's being funded partially by a grant from the Tree Fund. Bryant Scharenbrock from the Morton Arboretum and Kelby Feit from Bartlett Tree Experts are working on finding out whether or not biochar, which is the byproduct of the incineration of organic matter, it's basically inert. It's almost like charcoal. And they are working on incorporating that into the soils around trees right here in Chicago. They worked some biochar into the soils of the trees along, was it Milwaukee Avenue in Bucktown? I don't remember the street, but there were a whole bunch of them. And the idea is to take a look and see if they can somehow use this material to prevent compaction of the soils around these trees and see if it makes a significant difference in the health of the trees in the long run. So that's some of the research that's being funded by what these folks here are riding their bikes for. Mm-hmm. In October in Virginia. The Tour de Trees, the Steel Tour de Trees, is
please, yes.
The signature fundraiser for the Tree Fund, which is based right here in Naperville, Illinois. And we are using the money that's raised by the Steel Tour de Trees riders. There's about 65 of them this year, and each of them will raise at least $3,500 for the privilege of riding their bikes 500 miles through Virginia.
Don't get that. There's a logic of that that just escapes me.
We talked about the crazy factor a little while ago,
well,
I think.
Well, Greg.
We're talking dedication.
Greg, could you, what is the crazy factor in that?
You know what? It's when you go on this ride and you get with the group and you know what it's all about and you know the kind of money you're raising for the research, it's a lot of fun. And you lose the thought of really riding 500 miles, but you're riding with the group and it's just everybody's kind of pumped up and it's a great outing.
And I would think that, like a football team, everybody keeps each other going through the whole thing. And the best thing is the van follows in case you really...
Yes,
poop out.
Right. It's a fully supported ride.
Yeah,
and
Pam?
We have fun.
Well, I was just thinking. Also, it's a, you know, there's a common interest here. Many of us aren't in the field of like Mary and John here, but we care about the environment and about research and education. And I believe we have several things lined up. Mary can maybe talk about what we have lined up along the way for educational purposes.
I should pay her. She's like really good.
She's just, yeah.
What are we doing on the tour, Mayor? Well, let me talk about that.
No, go ahead, Mayor. It's really exciting.
I'm glad you're excited. I think the fact that we've got Pam and Greg here in the studio, these guys are a really good indication that the Tour de Trees is not just about arborists. We've got people who are passionate about the environment. Pam, you work for a company that makes batteries, don't
Interstate
you?
Interstate Batteries.
Mm-hmm. And
really?
Greg, you work for?
I work for a distributor, M. Holland Company, selling plastic raw materials.
So these
what
are
does
not...
that have to do with trees?
Well, exactly. They
Mark Younger.
There was some beer involved in this transaction.
That's what I hear, that often there's a little bit of beer involved, especially in these challenges you do with other teams. And by the way, you're a Team Illinois, and I want to let folks know that if they go to my website, mikenovak.net, and go to this week's show, there's a link there where you can contribute to Team Illinois. There are various teams doing this, but Team Illinois wants to win, of course. They want to raise the most money, and that's what this is all about. So it goes to the Tree Fund, and you can click on and do that. I will mention also very briefly, one of your sponsors is listening. Scott Jameson from Bartlett Tree Experts.
Good morning, Scott.
He wrote two things. First is helpful information, biochar on Milwaukee Avenue, about 100 trees, he says, in Wicker Park and Bucktown. The other one, he wants to take a little issue with what John said about herbicides. He says, I agree lawn herbicides can harm trees, but saying trees eventually die from lawn herbicides is simply not true, is what he says. Take them on, John.
All right. Controversy.
Well, I've seen on a street that I lived on where everybody across the street had for years done their lawn work, and we had some Norway maples with no apparent injuries or damage, insect or anything else, and they just slowly, slowly declined. I looked at them often because I lived across the street. There were no girdling roots either, which is another reason that you can have girdling, you know, your Norway maples die. And these trees were no bigger than about 10 or 11 inches. And the only difference from all the other Norway maple trees on the block that were still alive was that the ones that were still alive, they had no lawn chemicals. I mean, their lawns were fairly weedy. They were there, but these other three trees, the lawns were absolutely pristine, and they had the tree services doing it, and it had been doing it for 10 or 15 years. It does take a while, but when there is a buildup that does occur in the soil.
In your face, Scott Jameson! Do you think he'll still continue to listen?
He doesn't beat you over the head with a branch. Right?
Yeah, I know. He's going
to
show up at the door.
I
Before I let you go, let's talk about some of what the big doings, because it's got to be really fun to, as a cyclist, to go to different parts of the country. Next year, it's in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And I told Mary she's got to hire me to do the – I don't know why she didn't hire me to do the broadcast from out in Virginia this year, but – from Oregon, I think I should come out and do the broadcast from there.
I seem to remember asking you if you were interested in this, and you said, well, you know, I just have so much going on in Chicago.
I don't remember that conversation at all. Chuck Lavelle is going to be back and tickling the ivories and doing some song. And you say he's got a really good group with him this year.
He does. Chuck is actually our keynote speaker at our finale ceremony this year. And we're really looking forward to having him kind of be the focus of the program. Chuck is a very good speaker. He's one of the premier environmentalists in the country. He's a tree farmer. He has a family tree farm in Georgia. And he's also the keyboardist for the Rolling Stones, which gives him a certain cachet with me, at least. And,
Heather, and me.
Eric Clapton, the Allman Brothers. Yeah, Chuck is a fabulous keyboard player.
I mean, that's the thing.
He's also a good guy.
And he's behind Mother Nature Network.
Mother Nature Network.
Which is a great – I get emails from them every week.
Me too.
And love the stories they have there. It's an online newsletter about the environment. So
they did a piece on the Tour de Trees. And so Chuck is our keynote speaker, but he's also playing at American University on October 8th for our finale celebration. And he'll be joined by the Tom Principato Band, which is a group of top drawer blues musicians from Washington, D.C. So we're looking forward to that.
I'm looking at Heather's got her video up from
Chuck Lavelle. I just tagged the Mike Novak Show in it, and this was his sound check last year.
Play that. We can play a little of that. Why not? Let's see what we got here.
Heather says, yay.
I was just keep the headphones away.
Sorry,
from Mike. Sorry. I was just sitting next to him and he started playing and I just turned my camera on and sat there.
But that's Chuck. That's
yeah,
what
I mean,
does.
He was just. It's just amazing. Did you just post this video?
No, this has been up all year, but I just tagged the Mike Novak Show.
Tag it. So
tagged in it.
And there's Chuck, and we're setting up, and he's just playing. He's just great. I mean, talk about a nice guy.
Yes.
You know, just one of the nicest guys ever.
I think he autographed every helmet for the tour riders last year. He was there getting his picture taken with people. I mean, he is probably one of the most approachable celebrities you could ask for. He likes people. He's passionate about what he's doing, and he really wants to just talk to people and let them know why it's important that they care.
So you've got Chuck, and what else is going on along the route?
We have, I think, one of the coolest things that we're doing is at the Virginia Arboretum on Friday, October 7th, at 9 in the morning. We are going to what's called Blandy Experimental Farm at the Virginia Arboretum, and we are going to work with 26 middle school kids, and we are going to plant 50 trees that morning. They are going to have the holes dug. Greg's looking worried.
Yeah. Get off the bike. Pick up the shovel.
Pam says, I'm going to breakfast. But
get out of the van. Grab a shovel.
So, but we'll have 26 middle school kids and 50 trees to plant that morning, and we will get it done probably in half an hour, I would guess.
That'll be a lot of fun.
But the Arboretum is adding these trees. They're kind of doing away with some of their cultivated landscape and turning it back to forest.
I'm going to go to a phone call before we get you out of here. I do have to let you know that Scott Jameson wrote, don't make me call in. He said, don't make me call in, John. And he's got the little smiley face, but he says, check the science, my friend. And when you use my friend in that tone of voice or tone of writing, he means business.
We'll talk, Scott.
Let's go to line two, Chris in Palatine. How are you doing, Chris?
Oh, marvelous. Beautiful day yesterday. A little cloudy and wet today. But I wanted to ask a question I've wondered about for a while. I live across the street from the Deer Park Forest Preserve in Palatine. Mm-hmm. And there are some sections there. I don't know if you would call them wetlands or whatever, but I'd say several months out of the year, they're under. You know, there's about 2 or 3 feet of water in there, and in the middle of that are several very tall oak trees. How can they survive in being underwater or being in water?
Good question, Mr. John. Do you think you can handle that one?
Well, yeah.
Well, doesn't it depend on the kind of oak? Because there are oaks that like water. I mean, isn't a swamp white oak a tree that will do well?
Yes.
I guess it would depend on the oaks, but it also depends on how much water is there and how long is it there.
Well, I'd say it's there, unless we have a particularly dry period for for an extended period of time, it's underwater, most of the year, I would guess.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
There's, I don't know as far as how much water it gets. I mean, I don't get that close to it. I'm going to wander in there and measure how deep it is. But, just looking at the side of the trees, I guess it might get like 2 feet deep or, going up on the tree bark 2 to maybe 3 feet.
Wow. That's something. John, you're just shaking your head, pal.
Well,
should I call Scott?
No, that's fine. If they are oaks, I suspect that they are swamp white oaks because they do well in that type of environment. Obviously, the name, swamp white oak.
I'm sorry, but would they be a different variety of oak than all the other oaks that are surrounding them?
Could very well be. The other thing is maybe when the water does go down at that particular area. You say it's in the middle of all this?
Yeah, when I say there's like a little pond, I don't know how big. It's not huge. It's, it's like naturally occurring in the forest. So, I don't know, maybe, 50 yards around or something like that.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a depression or something where the water just gathers.
Right. Yes.
And, if these oaks are alive and if they're fairly big, I can't suspect that they... They're more than likely swamp white oaks. That's my best guess without actually going.
Yeah,
out and looking
at what
it.
You need, Chris, is get an ID. Go on out there, find a.
Sure, I'll just put on my hip boots and wander on in.
Well, you can do that. You could either get an expert out there, a naturalist who works in the area, a steward, a volunteer, who would know. Because I'm curious now. Or you can go online. There are lots of tree ID sites, and you get leaves and the bark and the branches, and you can put it all together. You know it's an oak, so you've got it really narrowed.
Are there different leaves between a swamp oak and a other oak?
Oh, yeah, the leaves are different. Yeah. Some of the oak leaves are rounded, and some are pointed, and some are odd-shaped. They don't, you wouldn't even think it's an oak unless you're an expert. If you go and look up a tree ID site, you will see that there are different kinds of leaves for oaks. and I bet you could ID it pretty quickly.
Oh, interesting. By the way, you know, for the city arborist or forester, do you work with the Cook County Forest Preserve at all?
No, we don't. They're a separate entity.
Oh, I know, but
we know who they are
and where they live.
We do interact with them on certain occasions when our, for example, with the gypsy moth and the emerald ash borer, we do communicate with them because they don't. They'd like have the same goals that we do of trying to control or maintain some sort of stability with the bugs, because we border a lot of Cook County Forest Preserve District land, and a lot of Cook County Forest Preserve District land is actually within the city of Chicago. So we do have a little, we know each other. They do their thing, we do our thing.
Okay, so you guys don't like, you regularly communicate back and forth and chat and meet and, you know, get together for coffee or a beer and discuss the issues and things?
Not on a regular basis.
Good question, Chris. I got to let you go,
okay,
buddy.
Thanks
for calling in. Bye-bye. So if you want more information, I want everybody within the sound of my voice to go online, go to my website, support Team Illinois on the Tour de Trees, and you can give that website out, too. Well, it is. It's HTTP. There's no www. It's just steeltourdetrees.org. And if you go on that site and look up stuff, there's a donate button at the top, but you can skip all that just by going to my website, mikenovak.net, and this week's show, and I've got the specific link where you can donate to Team Illinois. Anything else I've missed? What, oh, I was watching Heather put up her finger, and you're just waving to William, aren't you?
Yeah. 1 second, I'll be right out.
Okay.
I have to queue two people today.
Yeah. Mike, let me mention it's tax deductible if they make a donation.
Oh, even better. Yeah, forgot. 501c3.
You bet.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, good. That, you know, you gotta get every edge you can.
Absolutely.
Mary, I'm going to let you wrap it up.
Well, we are we're leaving in 2 weeks for Virginia. We are stoked. We are pumped. These guys are going to ride 500 miles on their bike.
500 miles, 500 miles. Oh, never mind.
Through the hills.
Can I cut him off?
I control the microphone.
So they're riding the tour. I'm running it, and our goal is to raise $500,000 this year.
Wow.
Yes, we are within shot of that. But
are you really?
Yes,
good.
We
good
are.
Good for you.
And, but we're coming down the home stretch. The campaign finishes up October 31st, and I'm sure Pam and Greg have been actually doing tree work and yard work to raise money for their fundraising campaigns. These guys are dedicated.
Amazing. What kind of yard work you've been doing?
Well, we took down some elms that had the Dutch elm disease for some people. And
you didn't climb up 30 feet and chop off
hired.
Pam was lugging really big logs.
I actually drove the dump truck.
Yeah.
And we rented a chipper and did the whole recycling of the chips into the environment, you know.
And you didn't drop them on any power lines or anything?
No,
like
we hired a specialist to go up high and trim the
stuff. A certified arborist.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
A climber and an arborist.
Exactly.
And all that. We did the heavy work on the ground.
All right. Greg, thank you, Pam, Pinkley, and John Kirchner, Mary DiCarlo. Good luck with the...
Nobody says it like Mike. I have to come back periodically for a hit with this.
Good luck with the event, and I hope you reach your goal. And
thank you, Mike.
We'll talk.
Thanks for the support. We appreciate that.
My pleasure.
The more people that know what we're doing, the more money we can bring in. And the trees everywhere benefit from what these guys are doing in Virginia and what we'll do next year in Oregon, what we did last year in Chicago.
And we'll talk about that broadcast in Oregon next. Yes, John?
If anybody wants to join us on our ride in Oregon, we're going halfway up Mount Hood.
So many people are going to want to ride their bicycles halfway up Mount Hood.
But the other way is downhill.
That's
even scarier, okay?
Well, I was actually been on the road before that we're going to be taking, because it goes out of Portland and goes up the Columbia River,
mm-hmm.
and then it winds up from the base of Mount Hood at the Columbia River And we're going to about 4,800 feet elevation and around to about the north side of the mountain. And then we come back down into the North Valley and out into Portland.
It's going to be a gorgeous ride. It'll be a really neat opportunity to see Oregon and parts of Washington. And we're talking about actually starting up in Seattle or maybe Vancouver. So you're going to see some absolutely spectacular scenery from your bike, which is kind of the best way to see scenery if you can do it.
Absolutely. All right. I got to get Rick DeMaio in here. So you guys hit the road.
Thank you.
All right,
Dan.
We're gone.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks,
Mike.
All right. It's the Mike Novak Show in Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. The autumnal equinox comes on Little Cat Feet this Friday at 4.05 a.m. Central Time, which means to make sure the cat box in your garden has clean litter. It also means that the weather, they are a-changin', to abuse a song lyric. And we discover in the September-October issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine that our very own Beth Botts, who will be sitting in this very chair next week, is a thief. Yes, she readily admits in a story in the magazine that she steals tree leaves once they have fallen to the ground. You should bust her on this when she fills in for me. She has this crazy notion that tree leaves are good for your garden. Well, actually, leaf mulch is about the best thing you can do for the soil, but I'm not going to give her any credit for it. And you've heard of heirloom plants. What about heirloom bulbs? There's a story about Scott Kuntz from Old House Gardens in Michigan, who's keeping these varieties, some of them hundreds of years old, from going extinct. There's my column on the inside back page. Some people think it should go extinct. Pick up a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over Chicago, but it's a lot easier if you subscribe. Call 888-265-3600 or go to chicagolandgardening.com.
Investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees, and you heard this story a little earlier. You know, I talk about Joe the landscaper doing tree work, and I mentioned it that the folks down the way in my neighborhood were climbing 30 feet up on a tree in the dark and doing it and scaring everybody in the neighborhood. Don't do that, folks. Please don't even get up on a ladder and, you know, and lean over with the pruning saw and think that you can. Don't worry. It's just this one cut. You could hurt yourself seriously or cause other people to get hurt. So that's why you hire a company with trained, educated, and certified tree professionals like the Care of Trees. They're also bonded and insured to protect you and their workers. Can you say that about Joe the landscaper or your crazy neighbors? Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Invite the certified arborists, and that's the key. They're certified arborists at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220, 847-394-4220, the Care of Trees, their businesses, people, and their love for trees.
Make this your best gardening season yet. Hi, I'm Melinda Myers, horticulturist and gardening expert. Invest a bit of time now to ensure a bountiful harvest and beautiful landscape throughout the season. And include Milorganite, eco-friendly, all-purpose fertilizer as part of your formula for success. Use Milorganite organic nitrogen fertilizer in all your planting beds. The low-nitrogen, slow-release formula makes Milorganite goof-proof and good for the environment. So choose Milorganite for better results naturally. Available wherever garden supplies are sold.
There's a fire starting in my heart, reaching a fever pitch and it's bringing me out the dark. Finally, I can see you crystal clear. Go ahead and sell me out and I'll lay your ship bare. See,
it's the Mike Novak Show in Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. A little late. Sorry about that, Rick DeMaio, but I had a bunch of people in the studio, and they came all the way down, and I just couldn't stop talking.
All the way from Oregon, or is it Oregon?
Well, it's Oregon, but they just came from, I think, the north side of Chicago. Anyway.
Oh, well, no, I meant Oregon, Illinois.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. I doubt it. You sent me a very interesting thing this week in the mail about climate change and
climate variability.
Climate variability, which is it's not exactly the same as global warming, but
it's not. But that's okay. But keep going. What you were saying?
Oh no! I don't want to step on your how you describe things, your phraseology, I guess. And that is your point always, is that when you say global warming, then you just get into a fight about it.
Right.
But climate variability is hard to disprove here because there's just a lot of things that are different. And what was the thing that you were telling me about?
Well, the amazing thing about it, Mike, was do you remember how the skies looked around the Chicagoland area on Tuesday?
You mean the fire?
Yeah, the smoke and the haze and all that other kind of stuff. And
yeah.
That got me thinking was because people said, well, wait a minute. You mean there's a forest fire 600 miles away in northeast Minnesota? How did that get down here? And I think it has a lot to do with what's been going on across the northern part of Minnesota, Michigan, the UP of Michigan, rather, northern sections of Wisconsin. It's been very, very dry. In fact, I was looking at some information out of the Marquette, Michigan area. They had one of their longest dry spells ever, dating back to, I think, almost the early 1830s or 40s. Parts of the northern sections of Minnesota have had their driest period in well over 100 years. And then you think about how much rain we've had across parts of, northern Illinois. We had our wettest August ever on record, but yet you go further south, in the western sections of Illinois, and they've had basically dry conditions, hot and dry conditions. One of the reasons why a corn crop is not going to be doing too well this year, even though some of the locally grown corn, and I mean within, say, 20 miles of downtown Chicago, is pretty tasty. But if you go a little bit further south, the corn is not too well. So speaking of how this, kind of relates to climate variability, is we had five consecutive days, I shouldn't say we, but Duluth, Minnesota, five consecutive days of temperatures in the 80s. That's the latest so far ever that they've ever had temperatures that warm, that long of a period. And then it was followed by record cold. And then some of the record cold was attributed to the fact that we've had record dry weather across that area. And it kind of makes you start to think about each time we have records or extremes, they seem to be either one notch below what we expect or one notch above what we expect because of how the short-term extreme weather is affecting the long-term extreme climate. And it kind of keeps making you think about things from a standpoint of these high degrees of variability. One of the reasons why I think the forest fire was able to linger so long was part of that area, oddly enough, Mike. Some of those trees in northern Minnesota have been laying on the ground for over 10 years due to a severe thunderstorm event back in 1999 that blew down about 100 acres of trees, and the trees are just laying on the ground rotting. So now you have this fire that started in a very warm, dry period back in August, and then the fire kind of went away, but there was still some stuff smoldering there. And then we got into this real hot period in early September. We had those temperatures in the mid-90s, and then again we had, warm weather a couple of weeks ago. And not only did the fire grow to 40,000 acres, but it grew to 100,000 acres. And, Mike, have you ever seen the difference between a fire from very young pine as opposed to old pine? It has kind of a white, kind of acrid smell. I should say not a white smell, but it has kind of a white look to it, and the odor tends to be a little bit like when you go and when you burn any new wood, it just has a different smell to it. And I think that's one of the reasons why the smoke was able to linger in the atmosphere for so long. And then it moved itself all the way down into Illinois. Then we had this, the smoke here. So when I'm going about briefing the students on how this came about, you kind of have to go back and say, okay, well, the smoke was here because of this. And the fire started with because of this, but the fire got so big because of this. And the next thing you know, you're looking at temperatures in northern Minnesota on Wednesday in the lower 20s. In fact, International Falls had a low of 19 degrees, which was the first time ever in 160 years
that they had overnight low temperature in the teens. And this was on the 15th of September. And you start to shake your head. You go, okay, we're dealing with the forest fire because of dry conditions. We're dealing with the glowing of the fire because it's been so hot. And then 3 days later, we're talking about record low temperatures. You're trying to figure out what extreme is related to which extreme and how much variability you can get here. And it really begins to press you as a scientist to try to put these things all together in a perspective that people, you know, can kind of understand how they began, how you analyze them, and how you predict them. And I think it's becoming, you know, it's not like cataclysmic. It's not like the world's going to come to an end. But I just think what's happening is we're seeing a different part of the science of understanding weather that I don't think we've ever seen before. And I don't think it has to do with really the fact that we just are more aware of things. It just seems that these things are just happening more and more. And I think we're better able to understand how they all kind of fit in together. It's been interesting from a standpoint, even of watching the weather for 25 years, to be able to learn something about this and kind of put two and two and two together.
You get six. Two and two and two.
Yeah, exactly the answer I was looking for.
Good. I would pass your class, at least part of it.
Yeah.
It's
what this comes down to is you think about why it's been so dry across that area, usually a very, very dry air mass leads to a very cool air mass as well. So, you know, what does this do for, you know, weather around here? It still looks like we're heading into the fall season, as you mentioned, the equinox arrives on Friday. It still looks like somewhat of a typical up and down first half of fall, and still unsure about how things are going to transition into the fall and winter season. But the tropical season has definitely slowed down a little bit, which is good news. But it's not over yet. So as long as we can keep a couple of tropicals going in the Atlantic, usually that leads still to above normal temperatures for the rest of the month of September.
So up and down, any rain in the forecast?
Yeah, we had a couple of sprinkles that moved through overnight. Are you heading down to the big tractor pull at Joliet Speedway later on tonight, Mike?
No.
Oh, come on. It has to do with farming and tilling the ground and stuff like that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
Stick there. You can get food on a stick there.
Yeah, exactly. Then it'll end up on the internet. Your picture of doing that. Okay.
But a couple of sprinkles today. Better chance later on this afternoon and tonight, and then a better chance of showers tomorrow. We had 3 days this week where temperatures are actually failed to break the 60 mark. That's the first time ever in 97 years. So we're done with that part of the cool weather. So we'll be in the upper 60s today, probably low 70s tomorrow. Tuesday looks nice. A lot of sunshine with temperatures in the low 70s. And it cools down a little bit for Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. But all signs indicate that we're in pretty much of a dry pattern.
Okay, and we're done, Rick. I'm sorry to say, but thank you. Dry pattern, a little bit of rain. Talk to you next week, and we'll be back with the second hour. Stick to it.
Way down upon the Suwannee River, far, far away, that's where my heart is turning ever. That's where the old folks stay.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
I feel like I should give a prize to whoever can identify that singer. You probably don't have any idea, and I know Heather's getting our next guest on the...
Chuck LaVelle?
What'd you say?
That wasn't Chuck LaVelle?
No.
Oh, I thought for sure you were going to play some Chuck after that.
But whoever's doing it is playing the piano and was the vocalist. Don't say anything out loud.
Wow, you're kidding! I didn't know he could sing.
773-8... Well, that's a matter of judgment. 773-838-9278 if you have any idea who that is.
Give him some more. Down upon that Swanee River,
far, far away. He's doing a thing and he's playing a piano too.
Is this new?
It's
relatively. Yeah, 2011. This is brand new.
Yeah. So there you go. All right, 773-838-9278. I'll give you. I hate him because he's so talented.
Yeah.
That's it.
He's probably really nice too. So
he
like you want
is,
to hate
yeah.
him, and then when you meet him, you can't because he's like super super nice.
Yeah.
So he's super nice and super talented, and yeah, you're just sitting there like with all this aggression that you don't know what to do with, and it's rough.
You just start hitting pillows.
Yeah.
You know, isn't
screaming
that...
into them, hitting them helps.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's talk about taking out your aggression on exotic invasives and cleaning up natural areas. How's that? Because next Saturday is National Public Lands Day. Wait, not next Saturday. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
next Saturday.
Yeah.
Next Saturday, I have so many things coming up, and some are on Saturday,
your
and some are on Sunday.
Your brain's its own root ball, just spinning around and around and around in its tree pit, isn't it?
That is a very good metaphor.
I thought so. I have my moments. I'm redeemed.
Very good.
Thank you.
That is the Mike Novak Show in a nutshell. It's like the roots from my brain are just going round and round inside my cranium.
Mm-hmm. No tree pit.
They're trapped.
They're trapped there.
No water.
Mm-mm.
No nutrients.
Mm-mm.
Mm-mm.
Not even an earthworm trying to burrow through your ear. Nothing.
Let's go to line one. Bring in Renee Frigo, who's a naturalist at the Glen Ellen Park District. And I'm going to be there next Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Hi, Renee.
Good morning.
You guys are, Renee, I have to thank Renee for calling National Public Lands Day to my attention.
I'm sorry, Beth Botts tweeted us, and she called us out real good.
Wow.
Can you see that?
Hold on, Renee. Yeah.
One second. I'm sorry. I couldn't help it.
And I need to say this because Beth Botts is filling in for me next week. All right. She's filling in. Heather will be piloting the spaceship
mm-hmm.
here,
mm-hmm.
Which I know you love to do. Sit in the big chair.
I do.
Beth is here. And Beth writes, geez, you invite people to be on the radio and then complain they talk too much. Pot, kettle. Thanks. Thanks, Beth.
I like a woman who calls a spade, though.
And a tree root a tree root.
You got it.
In my tiny little cranium. Sorry, Renee. As you know, I'm highly distractible, especially when people are writing in and...
telling the God's honest truth about him.
So Renee is the person... See, Renee's speechless already. She doesn't know... You don't know how to deal with this, do you?
No, my brain's in a million places, too, so I'm right there with you.
Well, you're getting ready for the big event in Glen Ellen next week at Churchill Park. And like I said, I'm going to be there at 9 a.m., and I hope some of listeners come out. And I'm going to, you know, I'm supposed to inspire people, but if you show up, you're already inspired. You don't need me to inspire you more, but I will do my darndest. And I'm really, really looking forward to it and seeing the park.
Yeah, it's a great little spot. It's a 23-acre site in Glen Ellen, and it's ironic that that not many people actually in our own community know about it. So we're constantly trying to get more people out there and visit it. And this is just one way that we try to do that. And this event it's on a national level. And it's sponsored by the National Environmental Education Foundation. And it was started back in 1994.
You know, you say back in. That's not very long ago.
No, it's not. It's a relatively new thing.
And one of the things, and I note on my website, you can go to MikeNovak.net, and this week's show, you know what, last year alone, volunteers removed an estimated 450 tons of trash, nationwide tons, collected an estimated 20,000 pounds of invasive plants, built and maintained an estimated 1,300 miles of trails, planted an estimated 100,000 trees, shrubs, and other native plants, and contributed an estimated $15 million to improve public lands across the country. That's, you know, and considering
it started in 1994. That's pretty good.
I agree. And they're estimating that this year, next weekend, that over 2,000 different sites are going to be participating again this year, and they're hoping for over 180,000 volunteers. So it's a pretty big event. And I think the neat thing about it is that you have these huge entities like the National Park Service and Bureau of Land Management and places like that do this, but also our local forest preserves and places like local park districts and that participate as well. So you've got people coming out for all different areas. And the biggest thing is mainly to get people outside aware of some of these spaces, because over a third of our nation's land is in public space. And you don't really think about that in suburban Chicago all the time, but, you know, you take a ride anywhere out west and it makes more sense. But with all this land and acreage and only so many people to take care of it, you know, you're trying to get as many sponsors and supporters as you can. And, boy, if they're willing to lend a hand and help with some of those efforts, all the better.
And you're right. If you go out west, the acreage is so much larger. But there's still a lot of public lands in and around Chicago and other major cities. And you talk about Churchill Park in Glen Ellen and how it's a resource that – if I interpret correctly, it's not used as much as you would like to have it used.
Well, there's the tricky part. I love it because it's a very peaceful place and that not too many people know about it. We're trying to bring more attention to the place. So, of course, I don't want hordes of people there as well, too, because that has its own problems. But the people that do tend to enjoy the park are people just going on walks or visiting it with their kids or grandkids, flying kites and taking pictures. And it's a very small site, but from a park district standpoint, it's one of ours in our own community, one of our largest natural areas. And so we're really trying to get as many people out to see it and, like I said, to support it and use it in a passive way so that it can still be enjoyed for the reasons why people come out there.
Well, you know, that's a question I asked of Jerry Adelman when he was on the show 2 weeks ago. And they're opening up the Openlands Lakeshore Preserve at Fort Sheridan on the bluffs of Lake Michigan there. And it's a very sensitive area. It's a rare ecosystem. And that was my question. I said, don't you feel a little tentative about opening this up to the public because it's so beautiful and it's so fragile? And he was very positive about it. He said, no, I think the people who come out here are going to have respect for that. But you know, as a naturalist in an area, that's not always the case. You hope people have respect for our natural areas, but sometimes they don't, and then it makes it even harder because
right. It's
bad enough if you're trying to rip out invasive species, and then you have to pick up beer cans too.
Right. Well, and a big part of it, I think, is just, you know, teaching people. You know, when I'm out working, I have several people who stop and wondering, why are you cutting trees down? Shouldn't you be planting them? Well, then I have the opportunity to teach them a little bit about what an invasive species is and the steps that we take to remove them. And by removing these species, we are actually creating a healthier ecosystem, and then we can start planting more trees in here that should be here, that were displaced, you know, when some of these invasives moved in. And it's also kind of hard when you're working with a group of kids and you're having them pull garlic mustard, and then you turn around and they want to, you know, pick a different type of flower out in the prairie, and that's not right because that's a good plant and this is a bad plant, and trying to explain that to people is sometimes a tricky thing as well.
Our number is 773-838-9278. If you're planning to do something for National Public Lands Day, or you have a question for Renee Frigo, who is a naturalist from the Glen Ellen Park District, give us a call. That's a very interesting point you bring up. And the point is, how do we teach not only the next generation, but our current generation, you know, adults as well, the subtleties of caring for natural areas? You mentioned cutting down trees. That controversy always exists because there are always people who are Well, I guess I have to just call them ignorant because they don't understand how that works when, you know, a lot of folks look at a stand of buckthorn and they say, that's my forest. Why are you cutting down my forest?
Yeah, and it's hard. And luckily in this park, it's a slow restoration process, but I have purposely left areas where we have done clearing, and it's probably in its third year of recovering. And on the other side of the trail, we've left the stand there, and it's a great place where we can show people and say, look on this side of the trail and look at the diversity here and look at the number of plants we have and look at the health of the trees. And then there, just look on your right-hand side, and there's nothing but a monoculture, and you can see the bare soil underneath it because there's no available sunlight and there's no available space for other species in there. So it's a great opportunity to teach people when they can see a spot.
Yeah, but Renee, those buckthorns are not encased in amber.
No.
and which means they're still producing berries, and the birds
are
still eating them, and the birds are pooping them, and then those little buckthorn seedlings are coming up.
You are exactly right, and that's why we're promoting National Public Lands Day, so that we can try to continue to teach people and get people out there. In fact, as we're speaking, I do have a Eagle Scout out at that park working right now, cutting out buckthorn, and we've got a chipper all lined up, and we're going to be doing trail improvements as part of our event next weekend, and just recycling that buckthorn and getting it on the trail so it's not going elsewhere. But yes, that's a big part of managing land.
Well, yeah, but I guess the thing is, it's scary to even leave any buckthorn there, even if it's a valuable tool to show people.
It definitely is.
Now, because then you have to manage that, too.
You are very correct. And part of it, too, is there's different techniques on doing that. I mean, it's a battle we're going to constantly be facing. But, for instance, you know, we focus on taking out the female trees that do produce the berries. And so you're trying to remove those first.
Ah, good for you. All right. Hey, listen, we got a phone call that I want to take right here, and that is Benita in Skokie. Hi, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hi, Mike. I met you at Pesci's about a year and a half ago. I'm the one that has no computer.
You're the only one that has a computer who listens to my show?
No, I'm the only one that does not have a computer.
Oh, does not have a computer.
And you gave me some information. We were in the education center in the back.
Yes, yes.
I went, since I have no computer, I figured I could find this by asking enough questions about the open land area. That the grand opening was last Saturday. I didn't get there Saturday, but I got there Sunday at Fort Sheridan.
Yeah.
And it just transports you instantly out of the city. I mean, you've got the waves lapping on the shore and just the nature. And I happened to meet an engineer that worked on that project from the beginning of June until the grand opening, and I'm just so grateful that they've got this. I walked north, which wasn't really far, and I started picking up some trash, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I had some foreign people actually drop a plastic bottle in front of me on the ground.
Are you kidding me?
No, I am not kidding you.
Oh, my goodness. See, Renee, this is what I'm talking about. You know all about that, right?
I do. And
so I bumped into the engineer again, and he said that they had done a lot of trash cleanup, and I suggested, you know, a garbage can. He says, well, then how do we get this garbage can, the garbage removed? And I said, you know, if it's big enough, you only have to do it maybe once a month. But I'm very impressed with it.
Yeah, you know, those are really good points about the space and what you have to deal with, Benita. I know that Renee faces that all the time and deals with that, but I'm glad you went up there. What did you tell the people who dropped the plastic bottle in front of you?
They weren't speaking English.
Oh boy.
So there's no point of me even trying to communicate with them.
So what did you do? Just pick up the bottle?
I picked it up, and as I was walking, I saw some, you know, beer can and some bottle tops and some plastic. I just started picking stuff up, but I didn't anticipate going up the beach area, so I didn't have a bag.
Uh-huh.
So I was trying to compact everything in one hand, you know, and pick with the other. But it wasn't really, it was very minor. What was there was very minor. So I believe the gentleman, the engineer, very nice man.
Yeah, no, and I'm sure it wasn't very much, but you wonder how anybody could leave anything like that.
I don't understand it. I don't understand the lack of respect, the disinterest and the disrespect and not caring about simply, you know, and I know kids are young and they probably hung out there and had some beer and stuff, but this is what we've got, and it's natural, it's not going to be managed, it's precious, and it's not a renewable thing, and it deserves respect.
Yeah, it does, and I think that's what Renee's talking about when she's trying to teach kids about this. You have to teach the respect for the planet. I mean, I did a talk the other day for the Lutheran Church, actually, a group of people talking about hunger. And that was one of the things we talked about, was respect for the planet and how do you foster that? How do you educate people about that? There's so many of us. We're going on 7 billion now. And we have a huge effect, and you know, and I won't even get into the whole, are we causing climate change? Except to say, yeah, what do you think when we're pumping out all these emissions all over the planet? You think that has no effect at all? Don't give me a break. Get serious, all right? You think that's just fine?
Another thing that needs to be done is the trail. I think there still needs to be a lot of work done for the walking trails and ravines. And from what I understand, what an engineer told me, I walked across one bridge over a small ravine. He says, if you go on, I think it's to Walker Boulevard or Walker Avenue, and go about an eighth of a mile south through, you know, very expensive homes, eighth of a block, he says, and make a left-hand turn, then there is this much bigger bridge. There's this much larger expansion.
Yes, I went over that, and it's just fabulous.
Isn't it kind of confusing?
No, I understand what you're talking about, Bonita, and you got to understand that they're working with what they were given.
Sure.
You know, and
sure.
there's housing there. There's still government land there. There's municipal lands, and they've sort of carved out this area within existing boundaries in different jurisdictions, and the fact that they've been able to do that at all is remarkable. And you're right.
Oh, yeah.
It is a
but
little...
I want to make it clear that it's a stop-start situation that you do... Well, and I think they might be able, with further improvement, you do have to walk through some of the streets of the public housing then to pick it up again. I'm not quite sure because the trail kind of...
Yeah, they want to connect it. That's their grand plan, is connect it all with one path. It's not the case right now. But it is a great start, and I'm glad you went there.
I'm so thrilled with it. I was so lucky to speak to this engineer. He said they were having lunch on the lake, and deer actually came up to them. They were just sitting, and they had to literally scare the deer because the deer were just getting too close.
Well, I'll tell you what. Because you called and you gave us such a great report, Bonita, do you have a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine?
I'm afraid I don't.
You do now?
I don't have one.
You do.
No, I do not.
No, I'm telling you. I'm.
Mike's going to give you one.
Stop.
You know, he writes for them, so he can kind of do that every now and then.
Thank you so much. And Heather, you were at the Pesci's, too. You have the beautiful long red hair.
Yes. Oh, and thank you. I was there.
You're welcome.
So hang on.
Stevie Nicks.
What's that?
She kind of reminded me of Stevie Nicks because she had a flowing top on.
Oh,
very
now
pretty.
I'm
very
never going to hear the end of it now.
That was the best compliment you could have given me. Thank you.
You had to go down that road, didn't you?
I did kind of look like Stevie Nicks, though, didn't I?
All right, Bonita, you hang on and get Heather will get your information. Or rather,
so
Stevie will get your information. And you'll get a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine.
And Harry Potter, my son, will thank you.
Ah, perfect.
All right, I'm going to put you on hold.
Okay.
Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Renee, that was a little digression there, but...
Well, you know what? She did bring up a good point, and it is the fact that in a suburban and urban settings, you know, land managers do have a lot of those issues to deal with. And, you know, you're trying to piece together these oftentimes... small parcels of land, and how do you teach people about them in the process and working with landowners to make things happen? And so it is a very complicated process, but it also is interesting to get, you know, different stakeholders involved as well.
Yeah. Now, what about, and by the way, we're talking to Renee Frigo, naturalist with the Glen Ellen Park District. Next Saturday is National Public Lands Day. I will remind you that I will be speaking at Churchill Park in Glen Ellen at 9 a.m. So you got to get up on a Saturday. I'll be listening to Mighty House on the way out. And then after that, you're going to have volunteers there. Going to help out with project areas, including harvesting native seeds, planting trees, trail work. Not for too long, a couple hours, right?
Right, right. It's going to be a very short and sweet event. We realize that there's, you know, people have only limited time, and so our biggest point is to get them out and encourage them and, you know, let them work for maybe an hour. If they want to stick around, boy, we'll gladly accept their help. But just to get them familiar with some of the projects that we need to do, and they can choose which area they want to focus on. And we're going to have some light refreshments there, and we'll do a little tour afterwards and just show people what they have in their own community and have information on. We do monthly work days out there, but, you know, just I guess the overall point of it is just people need to know what's out there and what they can do to help. I know time's precious, but there's even just a half hour of your time or once a month come out for an hour. It makes a big difference to some of us, most groups that just don't have the time, energy, and staff to do all the things that they would love to get done.
What do you like best about Churchill Park?
I like the fact that It has a very interesting history, that it was, you know, we're trying to piece together a history of what it was probably once like. And then it was like most places, there's several areas that are quite wet that had been either excavated out or tiled and drained and used for agricultural purposes. And then there were a couple residents on the house or on the property. Those houses have since been demolished, and we're really trying to restore the land, but the thing that I like about it is it's small enough that it's fairly easy to manage. It's located right next to a school, and so we've been working with the school pretty closely and getting kids out there and just walking through the park. And that almost more importantly than the features of the park itself is the fact that over the last few years, we've gotten about 1,000 different volunteers to come out with help with various projects. And to me, I think that speaks a lot. I mean, most of the people who have come out are youth. And that's, to me, what's really important is getting these kids out there to learn the respect and to learn that it's that there are places like this that exist. And you know, you could stem off on lots of different directions, but, you know, one of the big partners of this event is the First Lady's Let's Move initiative and getting people moving. And, you know, her main focus is on childhood obesity, but, you know, there's all the talk about nature deficit disorder and getting kids up and out and moving. And
get them away from the computer, get them
exactly.
away from their devices. Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, it's oftentimes I'll work on a Saturday and I'm out there just cutting buckthorn or doing stuff, and I'll bring my 9-year-old son out there and I let him roam. And some people kind of question that and I make him yell every few minutes, but I let him go follow the creek and I let him, you know, go exploring, because that's something that I did as a child. And I think that kind of steered me in the direction that, you know, led to my career as I am. And I think that having kids having unstructured play opportunities where they can go in a place and explore is a very valuable thing, and we try to incorporate that into some of the things that we do at this particular place.
We just got, Beth Botts, who's filling in for me next week, just tweeted, she says, any other Chicago area National Public Lands Day events website. I'm so glad you asked, Beth, because what I did, you can go to the National Public Lands Day site, which is www.publiclandsday.org, or you can go to my website, mikenovak.net, where I've got the link to that. And if you go to the NPLD site, as they call it. You can type in a zip code and a city and come up with a bunch of events in the area. I went to Chicago, and I typed for events within 100 miles. And I got some that are up in Wisconsin. There's a ton in Illinois.
Yeah.
Deer Grove Forest Preserve, the Forest Preserve District of DuPage, Gompers Park in Chicago, Tall Tree Arboretum and Gardens in Valparaiso, Indiana, Spring Valley Nature Center in Schaumburg, Washington Park in Chicago, Rollins Savannah in Lake County, Medewin National Tall Grass Prairie, Gordon Park Beer Line Trail in Milwaukee. And that's just a few. Those, I mean, it was almost sort of random. I went by just to see what's there. And, of course, Churchill Park in Glen Ellen. So you can go to the site, pick an event, donate some time, volunteer, get a feeling of goodwill. And, of course, your place, you're actually going to give a little goodie bag when people
right.
come out.
Yeah. We've got a couple giveaways. They can walk away with a plant and some native plant seeds, and we'll encourage them to get those in the ground.
Well, Renee Frigo, I'm looking forward to it and meeting you in person and getting a little tour of the park next week and, you know, maybe pulling some garlic mustard or chopping down some buckthorn, picking up some buckthorn beer.
We've got plenty of jobs to do. So yeah,
I bet you do. Oh, you want me to shovel mulch on the trail, don't you?
You could do that, too.
Okay, I will do that. I will see you next week. Thanks again.
Thank you, Mike, and we look forward to seeing you.
All right, have a great Sunday.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We had somebody actually answer our question.
We did have someone answer. Well, play a little. Can you play a little of it again, or did it go to sleep?
No, let's play.
Yeah.
Let me play a different one so you can.
Our musical trivia here on the Mike Novak Show this morning.
This is the CD that I just picked up.
Where did you get that? A gift? Did you just see it and had to have it, or what?
I was sitting in a Starbucks.
I've done it too.
And they were playing it, and I went, "What's that?" And the woman said, "Oh, I can't play
it." It's a little mellower one, isn't it?
Well, it is, but
it picks up.
It does pick up, but mm-hmm. it'll take too long. I just realized that. So let's go to hold.
But no, I've
here we go.
Heard the music in the Starbucks and left with the CD before.
You have
at least I knew. I mean, it's the lesser of two evils.
Walking down the levee with my head hanging low.
I still
looking
can't believe that is
mama,
who it is.
But she ain't here no more, baby. You don't know. You don't know my mind.
So we have fellow on Facebook.
Yes, who listens to us on the stream. He's originally from Chicago, but he's listening to us in dear old Dusseldorf, Germany.
I cannot believe this.
We literally go worldwide on the World Wide Web.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Expat Chris is listening to us in Dusseldorf, and he says, "Oh, that's Hugh Laurie.
Swanee River later," and he posted a link of him performing from YouTube from earlier this year in April.
And if you don't know who Hugh Laurie is, think the TV show House.
Yep.
He's Dr. House.
Yep.
And I hate him because he's really talented. He plays great piano. Singing, you know, it's okay. At least it's in tune.
He's English. So I mean,
I know.
He has English speaking voice. His regular speaking voice is so English and proper and correct that the way he sings and the way he performs House is unbelievable.
Well,
because
another reason
his dialects are huge.
Well, I'm an actor. And one of the reasons I hate him, his dialect is flawless.
Uh-huh.
His accent is flawless.
Uh-huh.
And
he's used it in so many different ways. It's not just it's not like he can do one American voice.
Well, he was also in, there's a bunch of stuff he's done over the years.
Well, he's a voice in one of my son's favorite movies, Monsters vs. Aliens, a DreamWorks animated.
Really?
Yes. He's the crazy mad scientist guy. Different voice. Totally American.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And I'm forgetting the name of the thing. And, you know, Kathleen will write and tell me what else he's done. She'll probably pop something on. So here's what we got to do. Is it expat Chris listening right now?
I believe so. He friended me on Facebook a few days ago, and he's been following along.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I want to send him a subscription, Chicagoland Gardening Magazine.
Will they ship it that far?
I don't know.
I think that's a little bit out of zone five.
No, actually, Germany is probably pretty much zone 5.
Chris, do you garden?
You got to send us some more information.
Because I know he's a big fan of the station, too. He loves listening to WCPT. Yes, sir. He's originally from Chicago.
We got him all over the world.
Mm-hmm, we do.
How cool is that? All right. Well, maybe he'll send us.
All right.
Maybe he knows. I don't know if he knows.
I'll tell
what
him to message me his information, and we'll send him a little gifty of some kind that he'll like.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's do something new today. Let's make up a new word. How about burr-composterific? Burr-composterific. And that, of course, describes the one and only cotton burr compost from Back to Nature. Cotton burr compost is newer in this neck of the woods, but it's been used as a soil conditioner in the South for over 200 years. Famous for its ability to loosen clay soil, the organic mixture, which consists of composted cotton burrs, which feed the organisms that feed your soil, improves moisture retention in sandy soils, keeps harmful organisms in check, and unlike wood and wood-based compost, won't tie up nutrients. Oh, and it's affordable. Dr. Wally at Pesci's and I both love Back to Nature products, so give them a try. Back to Nature Cotton Burr Compost is available at Monkey Nursery in Niles, that's Niles, Illinois, Burlington Garden Center in Burlington, Wisconsin, Red's Garden Center in Northbrook, Illinois. Back to Nature, life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Did you know that the Care of Trees is the largest tree care company in the nation to earn accreditation from the Tree Care Industry Association? The Care of Trees has always been committed to delivering the best tree care services to their clients, so it's not surprising that their long-standing commitment has been recognized by the TCIA. Now, why is that important? Well, TCIA members follow stringent performance standards for quality and safety. They maintain trained, professional arborists on staff and are dedicated to ethics and quality in business practices through the accreditation process. And that's extremely challenging. It serves to highlight that the Care of Trees is recognized as a tree care company that meets high standards of excellence set by their professional trade association. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees.
You can have a beautiful lawn and be kind to the environment, too. Hi, I'm Melinda Myers, horticulturist and gardening expert. A few simple changes in your lawn care practices, like using Milorganite Goof-Proof Organic Fertilizer, can result in a carpet of green safe for your kids and pets. Start by raising the mowing height of your lawn, if you haven't done so already. Taller grass is better able to compete with the weeds. Mow often, removing only one-third of the total height, and leave the clippings on the lawn. Consider using a push or electric mower. It's good for the waistline and the environment. Further improve your lawn's health and greatly reduce weed problems with proper fertilization. Milorganite's organic nitrogen is slow release and won't burn your lawn even in hot, dry weather. Plus, you don't need to water it in. And the non-staining iron helps maintain the deep green color even in the heat of summer. So join the professionals and home gardeners who've trusted Milorganite for over 80 years. Use Milorganite for better results naturally. Available where garden supplies are sold.
Thought I heard Buddy Bolden say, "You're nasty, you're dirty, take it away. You're terrible, you're awful, take it away." I thought I heard him say.
A little more Hugh Laurie
I'm
there.
I'm still thoroughly impressed.
Are you?
Yeah.
I'm just impressed by the accent. the American accent and the fact that he can...
Let the bad air out. Open up that window. Let that stinking air out. Thought I heard Buddy Bolden say...
Oh, boy. Yeah, it's the CD is called Let Them Talk. Get it at Starbucks everywhere. I have no idea where else you can
well,
get it.
That's sad but true. That's the thing about Starbucks. At least you walked out with like an actual tangible CD. You own now the entire album. You didn't just download a song off of it and have it in, you know, floating on your device. There's something to me now about actually owning a whole album CD. Mm-hmm. And could you imagine folks who grew up with records and still have record collections? I mean, vinyl records.
I got them in boxes just... Like, in the garage.
I'll give them a good home if you don't want them.
Yeah, they're all beat up now, so I don't think so.
I kept all my grandpa's 78s, and I got all my dad's old 33 and a thirds and 45s, and I'm keeping
all of them. I got a bunch
of
78s, too. I mean, boxes of those, too.
Yeah, they're priceless. But, I mean, a 78, though, technically, you could, if you got it at the right speed, you could play it with a rock. I mean, that's the thing. Like, if you know, the Y2K.
I did. That's why you can't hear
exactly.
mine anymore.
But I mean, it's an unfailing technology, if you will, because it's like it's not reliant upon all the bells and whistles. You know, it's just it's a pure recording in its purest form. So I can't part with that. I'll keep it forever.
Before we get to our next guests, and if you own chickens, you want to stick around for this.
No, I own records. No chickens.
No chickens.
No chickens.
On my website, MikeNovak.net, this week's show, I put an email from Diane Blazek at the National Garden Bureau this week, and it had some really good information, frost tolerance of fall vegetables. Now, a lot of you are still, you know, got the gardens going and want to know what you have to look out for and which vegetables are going to take a hit and which can take a licking and keep on ticking. And it's a great article that you can link to. For instance, likely damaged by a light frost, and some of you have already had light frost, maybe have suffered, plants have suffered already, beans, cucumbers, eggplants, muskmelon, New Zealand spinach, okra, peppers, pumpkins, summer squash, sweet corn, tomatoes, watermelon, amaranth, and winter squash. The plants that can withstand a light frost, artichokes, beets, carrots, cauliflower, celery, Chinese cabbage, endive, lettuce, parsnips, peas, Swiss chard. Woohoo! Wait, where's my...
You and your Swiss chard.
I am your Swiss chard overlord.
I'm just a bitter old eggplant over here.
Escarole, arugula, bok choy, mache and radicchio. Those can withstand light frost. Now, these plants can withstand a hard frost. In fact, Brussels sprouts is on the list, and you shouldn't even harvest them until after a frost because that sweetens up the fruit on there. Broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, collards, kale, kohlrabi, mustard, onions, parsley, peas, radishes, spinach, turnips, leeks, and sorrel. So, and there's more information there about how to take care of them, but I thought I'd just give you that a little bit in case you're figuring, I didn't give you enough gardening this week. So there's your gardening tip of the week, and now we start with this.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. Give it the gravy, Davy. Everybody eats when they come to my house.
Sustainable food fundamentals. Growing good food that's good for the earth.
Catch a Tory Dory. Taste the bologna, Tony. Everybody eats when they come to my house.
Now, that would normally be the intro, but for this particular segment, I think we're going to go with... And some people recognize that. I think Martha Boyd has had that as an intro once or twice.
Yes, I have.
Yes, you have. And Michelle Toma, did I play that last year when you were on?
You did.
Oh,
yeah, you did.
It's
One of my favorite intros. What is it about chickens? The word chicken is funny. And then you think about chickens, and that's even funnier. And yet, you're here you are. There are people who raise them. Michelle, you do.
I do.
And you don't even have a yard.
Right. Yeah, I raise them on my roof.
Poor chickens. Stuck up there on the roof.
They're happier than most chickens people are getting their eggs from a store. So...
You've got free roof range chickens.
Exactly. Yeah, they have lots of room, and they are able to scratch. I have a good deep litter bedding for them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'd prefer to have them in the yard, but all in all, I think they're doing pretty well, and they're pretty happy chickens.
Martha Boyd, you're with Angelic Organics Learning Center, so I'm sure that you encounter chickens a lot. But do you have your own?
I do not have my own. I am a vicarious chicken keeper.
Vicarious chicken keeper.
Yeah.
They're free range in your mind.
She's a great supporter.
That's a good way to think of it, yeah.
Though. Yeah, but the reason you guys are on, it's the second annual Windy City Coop Tour.
Mm-hmm.
Now, last year, the first annual, you called it Hennapalooza. And actually, I like that better. How come you changed the name? Hennapalooza is just—it
got a lot of giggles. It was good for giggles. Michelle, do you want to answer the?
Because Michelle, you're one of the organizers of this thing.
Right, right. Along with Martha. Well, you know, we talked a lot about the name, and obviously Hennapalooza was a take on Lollapalooza, and there was concern about trademark issues and. Also, Lollapalooza will probably be moving on from Chicago, so it's not going to be a Chicago-centric thing forever. At least we're not sure whether it will be. So we wanted something that was more identifiable with Chicago. And
hey, you know what, though? If they had sued you, just think of the publicity you'd get.
Right, right.
That's what it's all about. It's all about the publicity.
Yeah. So Lollapalooza is being used all over the country as we started looking into things.
Oh, really?
Everybody has events with that ending. And we just wanted something that was just straightforward, but that even for somebody without a lot of nuanced ideas about things related to Chicago, they would be like, oh, that's the one in Chicago.
Well, tell me, Michelle, what is the Windy City Coop Tour? How does that work? And by the way, it's next Sunday, so a week from today.
Right, next Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., 25 homeowners and chicken keepers will be opening up their yards and letting people come through and take a look at their coop setups and answering questions about how to raise backyard chickens. And then we also have Belmont Feed and Seed is on the tour as well, and we'll be handing out some gifts to people who stop by. So it's a free event. People can download the map at windycitychickens.org. It should be a lot of fun. There's going to be a passport available that people can pick up and follow along. And it has information about the different breeds that people keep. And so it's mainly, I think, an educational and outreach experience.
Well, you know, I'm glad you said the WindyCityChickens.com because I don't have
.org.
.org, rather. But I've got the other ones.
Both go to the same spot.
Yeah.
Oh, to the Chicago Chicken Enthusiasts?
Yes. Yeah, they go to the site.
All right.
Both of them.
Good. Yours is simpler, though, because I've got the links on MikeNovak.net, and if you click on the link, it'll take you to Chicago Chicken Enthusiasts, and again, you can go to, what was your website?
WindyCityChickens.org
okay.
Or ChicagoChickens.org.
Oh, really? You just snapped them all up, didn't you?
We did.
See, that's the wise thing to do. Just get all of those domain names right out of the get-go. And
like she was saying, then you click on the event link, and it goes to a page where you can download the map, a description of sites, and we have some instructions for the day.
Yeah, and it's sort of self-guided tour.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And only 3 hours, so, you know, you're not going to probably see all 25. Well, last year, we tried to have a contest, see if somebody could go to all
right.
the... but you only 16. Had like 13 or 14, didn't you?
16 last year.
16 last year.
So,
they were still pretty clumped around Logan Square, but there were still some outliers. And this year there are some more far-flung outliers. So It's great for people who just want to go to something nearby and don't live near Logan Square. But they won't see all 25. Nope.
Well, do you have any estimates about how many people within the city of Chicago raise chickens?
People ask me that question a lot. I don't know. I think that this is sort of, I always say, tip of the iceberg. I don't know if it's quite that many more out there, but there are a lot more out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, obviously. Well, do you have to have a permit?
Nope.
So you don't even have to get like dog tag or chicken tags for your chicken, like you do for a dog.
No branding of your fowl. No
chicken tags. I liked it.
Yeah, no registration. You can have roosters, which in Chicago, subject to noise and other nuisance ordinances.
Uh huh.
So and yeah.
But well, let's go down that road for a second because. One of the aldermen made news recently mm-hmm. because she wants to ban having chickens in her ward. Who is that and why is that happening? I don't know who wants to speak on that.
I'd be happy to. Do you want to start, Michelle, or do you want me to jump in?
Oh, go ahead.
The same alderman who proposed a ban 4 years ago, Alderman Lane in the 18th ward, recently was interviewed again, wanting this time to ban them just in her ward alone, not for the whole city.
Mm-hmm.
And still citing some of the same reasons, this time a concern that backyard chickens would lead to avian flu epidemics in the city. And we've used the various reasons people bring up as a chance to educate folks about myths and realities,
mm-hmm.
and also about good policy. So like Michelle said, there are policies on the books in the city of Chicago that are just general for taking care of nuisances and sanitation and noise problems, and they all would handle anything that would come up related to chickens. So we've tended to just say, let's look at what's on the books already. We don't need to ban chickens. We just need to make sure that people take care of them well.
Mm-hmm. Well, what kind of problems can you encounter with chickens? I think people have this idea that it's a farm animal. What are you doing with a farm animal in your backyard or on your roof, as Michelle does?
I mean, if people don't take care of them, obviously there would be sanitation issues. I think that's probably the biggest problem, which is why we're doing, one of the many reasons we're doing the coop tour is to, like I said, educate people about taking care of them. It doesn't take a lot of effort to take care of chickens well and keep things clean. And then there are noise problems, too, if people have roosters. And even my hens, some of my hens are sort of loud, but, certainly no louder than a barking dog.
I'm probably a lot less loud.
Yeah, and I think at least, according to my neighbors, because I ask them often if they're being bothered by the noise, sort of soothing. So,
very soothing. I'm sorry, I just can't resist doing chicken stuff. You know, it's just. You did say that roosters are legal in the city of Chicago.
They are. Mm-hmm.
I thought they weren't. Where did I get that idea?
A lot of people think they're illegal. I think they're illegal in Evanston and other suburbs that mm-hmm. that allow chickens. So I don't know. That seems to be a popular misconception, though.
You know another popular misconception? That roosters crow only in the morning?
Yes, that is.
because we've had one in our neighborhood. I haven't heard him lately, but when he's around, all day long. It's like,
right.
you idiot! It's the middle of the day! And it's actually kind of entertaining. It's goofy, is what it is. We've got a call coming in. Let's go to line three and talk to Hannah. You're on the Mike Novak Show, Hannah.
Hi, I'm trying to legalize hens in the town where I live, and actually it's a really fairly rural town in Illinois. And
are you allowed to mention the name of the town?
Yeah, I live in DeKalb.
Okay.
And
that is fairly rural. Although you've got college there, but, you know.
Yeah, and it, I find it kind of amazing. Like, you can drive in within 10 minutes and, you know, hit farms, and we're surrounded by cornfields, but we can't have hens. So I've been trying to talk to the aldermen in the town and have them, because where we live, you have to have three aldermen to bring to the city for discussion. And I was wondering if you had any advice for someone who's trying to deal with this on a small scale, because it's just me and a couple other people.
Let's start with you, Martha. Did you hear the question?
It was a little hard to hear, but I think I got it.
She wants advice.
To change the rules in DeKalb.
Yeah, and she wants some advice. And, you know, how do you approach law? I mean, you're dealing with lawmakers right now. And, mm-hmm. you know, what are the things you say to them?
Well, it is good to have some backup information. So spending some time looking at the information on our website, and also there are a lot of links to other places in the country who have gone through similar issues. But just looking at some of the best practices and some of the common concerns, and then having responses to those is a good idea. Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure. Hannah, are you unable to hear them?
She's breaking up. I'm having a hard time hearing her.
Okay. But she's talking about best, you know, having information, getting best practices. Probably mm-hmm. what I would do, I think you guys need to hook up. You need to hook up with Chicago chicken enthusiasts, mm-hmm. Either Michelle or Martha here or somebody else. Can you give me, can Hannah get the information just by going to that site?
We do have a policies page. You need to join the Chicago Chicken Enthusiasts Google group to participate in the discussion forum, which you can do.
Did you hear that, Hannah?
Yeah, I submitted a proposal to several aldermen, and I have two on board. But when we actually go to the city council, I was kind of, because I don't know how to deal with them. I don't know if there's any, because I've met with some aldermen, but when you're dealing with them, like, within a group, I'm just kind of unsure.
They get into the all aldermany on you, you know, and it's just crazy. I don't get it. I tell you what, I would suggest, Hannah, that you talk to either Martha or Michelle. If you,
Hannah, can you come on the tour?
Can you be on the tour?
The chicken tour?
Yeah.
I don't have any chickens right now.
No.
Come on the tour and invite an alderman with you, if at all possible. I've got a few Chicago aldermen and their staff and some other folks coming on the tour this year, and the more the better, because if they see things with their own eyes, they see systems that are set up and maintained well, it immediately quells a lot of the stories that people start telling themselves that blow things out of proportion.
You know what?
So seeing it in person is one of the best things you can do, and then having good answers for those common concerns is important.
That's an excellent idea. I should call them.
Yeah, see if you can get them to come in Chicago a week from today and uh-huh. be part of the tour, and you know, maybe tour with some of the Chicago aldermen, and then they can do all their you know, civic talk amongst each other. Hannah, thank you so much. I tell you what, if you want to get in touch with Michelle or Martha, I can get you that information. Drop me a line at mike@mikenovak.net, and I can help you move forward on this. But I would advise you to join the Chicago Chicken Enthusiast and get on the Google group so you can get in on the conversation.
All right, excellent. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling. Bye.
Bye.
So there we go. Next Sunday, again, the time of the event is 11 to 2, and it's free, obviously, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you're even going to have urban chicken consultant Jeff Murdoff. We'll give
Jen.
Jen, I'm sorry.
Yes, Jen.
I've got Jen written there, and somehow I read Jeff. Jen, sorry, Jen.
Root ball spinning.
It's a root ball soup in my head. She will give demonstrations of chicken handling and basic hen health, and that's mm-hmm. going to be at 3532 West Belden. That's site number 14, and it's during the same three-hour period.
Right.
Well, have a lovely Hennapalooza. Oops. No, it's not that. But it is the...
you know, it's almost your call letters. It's now WCCT. We sound like a radio station.
Chickens on the air. All right. Great talking to both of you. You have a good Sunday. And
I hope
the tour goes well. We'll talk again soon.
Okay, great.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
There we go. And
good show, buddy.
Yeah, it was kind of fun.
This radio thing down, don't you?
You know, Dusseldorf listening.
Yeah. Chickens and plants and trees and open spaces.
So I want to remind people that I'm not here next week. Beth Botts, be nice to her. Treat her like a lady. As the song says.
I shall.
I don't care about you. You're running. You're the spaceship. I want you to whip her into shape there. You know.
Well, each time we do it, it gets a little tighter and a little tighter. So before we know it, we're just going to totally elbow you out of the chair.
I got a feeling she's going to do two shows in 3 weeks because my high school reunion is coming up, and I think I'm going to Detroit for that. Yeah, I think I got to do that. So you guys we'll have two shows to get this all together.
Okie doke.
All right, Beth Botts on this very radio station next week, and until then, we say go green
or go home
and go Bears.